Indeed, we are on the radar. First one back after the summer, looking at the big business stories of the week. Peter Cooper with me in the studio of ArabianMoney.net. Peter, great to see you. Thanks for staying with us.
No problem, Richard.
Loads of SMSs in tonight. Thanks very much indeed for those. Really do appreciate it. So an interesting one we've had in from that I really like from Anoop. Thanks, Anoop. About our energy discussion we were having before the break, Peter. Anoop says, we should stop these mammoth energy companies making our world believe that we are so dependent on oil and their other hydrocarbon offerings. The world will be a much better place if we start using alternative energy. Thanks very much indeed, Anoop. Appreciate that. But listen, we turn our attention now to the role of Dubai as a financial hub. DIFC, one of the crown jewels of Dubai over the past 10 years, attracting the likes of Morgan Stanley, HSBC, Goldman Sachs, the great and the good of the world's financial community. And a new survey, Peter, that you've been looking at says that maybe more of them want to come.
Yes, I think they found that 16% of financial professionals surveyed would actually like to come to Dubai. And it was only, I think, 19% for London or something of that order. And it seemed to, that seemed a considerable achievement, given that, you know, Dubai is a much smaller market for financial professionals, and perhaps, you know, the opportunities here may be better going forward than we sort of see them at the moment. And that was the other finding, that I think it was 60% of those surveyed thought that the financial world was shifting towards Asia and the Middle East, and Dubai has established itself as the sort of undisputed financial hub for this region.
Astbury Marsden is the recruitment consultant that did the survey. Singapore, way out in front with a score of 31%. Interestingly, way out ahead of Hong Kong as well. So Singapore, 31% want to work there. Fine. It's the absolute, it's the undisputed leader. But Hong Kong only had 16%, roughly level with Dubai. That surprised me. Hong Kong has been a well-established financial hub for 150 years. And a place that's renowned for a reasonably high quality of life.
I think it's down to language. I mean, Singapore is actually an English-speaking country. Hong Kong, it's Chinese, and you need Chinese really to operate in the financial sector there, as far as I can see. Dubai, again, the DIFC established as an English-language hub for the financial services sector.
Interesting comments from Mark Cameron of Astbury Marsden that you quote in your article, and he says a fast-growing, low-tax and bank-friendly environment like Singapore stands as a perfect antidote to the comparatively high-tax, anti-banker sentiment of London and New York. He says financial centres in the West have taken a real battering since the start of the financial crisis, and those factors that he attributes to Singapore, fast-growing, low-tax, bank-friendly environment, you could apply to Dubai, couldn't you?
Yes, and I'm sure that's that's one of the reasons why Dubai has come out so strongly in this survey.
The caveat is, though, that, and I'm sure you find this as well, talking to people down at DIFC, you do hear lots of stories of certainly big international banks maintaining only a skeleton presence for their investment banking teams in Dubai now. The deals that they all hoped for when DIFC opened in the mid-2000s just haven't materialised, partly because of the global economic downturn, partly because of the regional economic downturn, but they were all hoping for the local stock markets to reach maturity. They were hoping for a flood of IPOs and stock market listing. They were hoping for loads and loads of mergers and acquisitions and takeover deals. And there's a bit of M&A out there, but the local markets and IPOs really still in the doldrums, Peter.
They are. The Sukuk's been very strong, and bond issues, which we were mentioning earlier on, that's also come right. So it's not been all gloom and doom in the financial sector. But you're right, the stock market still has to prove itself. But one of these days, you know, it's at a 7-year low, or it was recently, the stock market will come back. It's on a cycle. And if you look at it, it's very, you know, the local stock market in particular is very depressed, considering the recovery we've enjoyed this year.
In the real economy.
In the real economy, yeah.
As you mentioned the bond market there, I've just got to say this as an aside. It is one of our top stories today. The boom in bonds of TDIC, the Abu Dhabi company, Tourism Development Investment Company. Their bonds, the real vote of confidence from the global bond buying community. They've been buying those bonds all year. The yield's tumbling on it. This is the company building the Guggenheim and the Louvre. And we also mentioned the Aldar story as well, that Aldar getting back on its feet and finishing off Yas Waterworld. Someone wrote in, and this was an interesting comment. It's about an hour ago now. I forgot to mention it. Half an hour ago. Summer is over, and the real estate boys are back on their spins of good news. which is an interesting comment. I didn't mention that earlier. No name on that one, but it's your point is very, very well made. Listen, another story, and it kind of chimes with the DIFC as a hub for bankers story, is Dubai as a hub for technology companies. And a couple of stories over the past week or so that have really taken that story in different directions. The bad news was Living Social, the company that bought GoNabbit with such fanfare a year ago, saying it's pulling out of the Middle East, hasn't worked out, it wants to get rid. On the plus side, you've got stories that LinkedIn, the social networking company, are looking to open an office in Dubai and hire companies here. I'm really interested to get your take on this because you were one of the guys who set up AME Info a while ago and sold it for a good chunk of money. So you've got a track record of starting an internet-based company here and making a success of it. You're on your next one now, which is ArabianMoney.yet, but you've been there. You've done that as an internet entrepreneur and made a success of it. How are you reading these two stories? Living Social, bad news. LinkedIn, good news. Glass half full, glass half empty?
It's just not everything works out. And particularly when you try anything in a sort of high technology space, you can hit the gold mine like Facebook, and they've just opened an office here as well, incidentally. Or you can have a situation that just operationally doesn't work out. I mean, I not really up to speed on what went wrong with Living Social, but it seems as though it couldn't deliver what it set out to, which is always a problem in business if you can't actually sort of provide what you say you're going to provide.
I think a lot of the group buying companies globally as well as here are struggling to make profit. There are questions about the business model. Groupon stock has not performed well since its IPO in the United States. Can these companies make a money with these discounting deals? Is there really a sufficient margin in there? There's growth in revenue, but profitability seems to be quite a long way off. That's not a Dubai or Middle East thing, I don't think necessarily. It could be a global thing. But again, they're a very new industry subsector, aren't they? Group buying, and no one really knows how it's all going to work out. In terms of the LinkedIn deal, I had an interesting conversation earlier this week with PK Gulati. Now, he's a tech investor based in Dubai, invests in early stage startups in the Middle East and internationally. He's been here a while. And the question I put to him was, it's all well and good having Facebook and LinkedIn set up offices here, but it's just really a small office, the size of someone's living room, perhaps a small apartment with a few salespeople. This is not attracting technological or entrepreneurial talent necessarily. I asked him if he was concerned about that, and he said, actually, no.
I would want them to have 1,000 people here. I would want them to come in and set up maybe localization offices, you know, maybe Arabic language offices, look at local requirements, like in case of LinkedIn, look at how they could help local HR practices, how they could build best practices out here. All this is fine, and I think that should be our end game. But I think this would be the first step, isn't it? When they would come to actually investigate or explore the region. And that usually happens at sales offices, isn't it?
PK Gulati there, he's optimistic that the sales office is just a first step, a beachhead, if you like. Someone writes in, actually, the half-full question. They say, Richard, it's half-full, but different liquids. Half-full, but different liquids. LinkedIn and Living Social are different beasts, which I guess is the point you made, Peter. It's not just about, are tech startups doing well? Are tech companies doing well? It's much more nuanced and complicated than that, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, if you can create a local brand and a local product, I mean, another good example is Dubizzle, which has captured the classified advertising market in the UAE, and it's now spread out across the region. What they've done is very interesting. I mean, but that's come from a local platform. That's not a foreign platform coming in here and sort of setting up an advertising office to try and get local adverts, which is really what the others are doing at the moment.
On the related issue, we've been talking a lot this evening about Sir Martin Sorrell and WPP, one of our top stories today. This is the world's biggest advertising company, and they've cut their global growth forecast for 2012, not by much, from 4% to 3.5%. Still, it does paint a picture of a slowing economy. One of the bright spots for them, though, is digital. Let's just remind ourselves Martin Sorrell's comments on digital, and then I want to get your thoughts as a tech entrepreneur on whether what he's saying chimes with your real experience here in Dubai.
Well, it's 32% of our business already, having gone from a standing start, let's say, 10 years ago. So in 5 to 10 years, it should be at least 35, 40%, maybe even half of our business. So that's what it means if you can segment it, because you can't segment it anymore. I think the model is the Google model. I mean, our business with Google is up from 1.6 billion last year to well over 2 billion this year. It's going like a train. Google have five legs to their stool. They started in search, moved into display, then into video, then into social, and now mobile. Those five areas are, in my view, all powerful. They have a much broader model than Facebook, although Facebook will be developing that model over time.
Will Facebook survive?
Oh, more than survive. Yeah. Facebook is a very strong branding medium, but as I've been at pains to point it out, and I've been flagellated for saying this, it's not an advertising medium, it's a branding medium, and it's about social conversations. Google, I think, have it sort of wrapped up in this five-legged stool that they have, and Facebook has to develop a very similar approach. They may not like the analogy, but they have to. It's rather like Apple and Samsung slugging it out. Google and Facebook will have to slug it out, and Facebook has to become much broader in the context. And you know, Facebook, for example, have got some big opportunities geographically. Google have not chosen to go into China. They're into Japan, but China is, you know, looking forward the next 5 to 10 years, China will be probably the largest advertising market in time in the world. It's the second largest already. And that's another opportunity. But broadly, I think the Google model is a very powerful one. And we're seeing tremendous traction so far this year at Google. We're up well over 25%. They're going from 1.6 billion to well over 2 billion.
So Martin Sorrell there at WPP. Digital is booming for him. Would you say it's going like a train, was his expression. You run ArabianMoney.net, it's an internet technology startup. Is it going like a train?
It's certainly been very much better this year. I mean, advertising's picked up all round, and you know, sponsorships are coming through. But I think digital is very underappreciated in this part of the world. I mean, you just look at the young people and what they're doing, and they're looking at these devices, and that's where your message should be. You look elsewhere and you see in the sports clubs piles of unread newspapers, which they're trying to give away free. People won't even take it when it's free.
In terms of a model that works, though, and finding a model that works, I know on ArabianMoney.yet you've got, like many financial news portals, a couple of business models. You've got advertising sponsorship from big companies, and that's clear for everyone to see. But you're also selling subscriptions, selling a premium newsletter for, I think, is it a couple of $100 a year?
Yes, $199 for a year.
And we know that anyone from Rupert Murdoch down is really struggling to sell online content. It can be done. The Bloombergs and the Reuters and the Wall Street Journal and the FT just about managed to do it. But that's a handful of premium financial data providers. Zawia as well here in the Middle East. You know, they did a very, very good job of that. It's a very tough nut to crack,
isn't it,
Peter?
The beauty of digital is that we reach all over the world, and it's the same cost for anybody anywhere. I mean, I've got a subscriber in Senegal in West Africa. Now, you know, why do they want to read about the Middle East and what's going on here? Well, who knows? But clearly they want to because they've subscribed. It would be more difficult if that digital medium wasn't there.
Going forward in 5 years' time, what do you think will be the main driver of revenue for a site or an organization like ArabianMoney.yet? Would it be advertising sponsorship, more conventional? Will it be subscription revenue? Or will it be a third revenue model that perhaps people aren't considering yet? I don't know what that might be.
I'm sure it'll be a mixture of different revenue streams. Even content is a revenue stream as well. I mean, we sell our content to other content providers, and they sell it on and give us a tiny percentage back of whatever they sell it for. But you know, that does actually work, but it has to be done over a much bigger scale to make it really work well.
We're talking with Peter Cooper of ArabianMoney.net. More when we come back.